You're listening to The Real Short Box, a comic book podcast made for geeks by geeks.
Hello, everybody, and thank you for coming out and listening to Real Short Box. My name is Donald, and I am here with a very special guest. I'm here with Mr. Thomas Hennessy. Thomas, say hello to everybody.
Well, hello, everybody.
And Thomas, we go way back, actually, years and years and years.
We go way back to the year of 2012, I believe.
Yeah, somewhere around there. So about eight, nine years now we've been been friends, and we've worked on multiple projects. I believe we met on a project very Shakespearean.
It was a very Shakespearean project, and that is exactly where we met. And yes, and then we've gone on to collaborate on a number of other things since then.
Yeah, yeah. We did, I don't know if people know this, but I created a web series called The Blue Beetle, Ted Kord Returns. And Thomas was the camera gop on that. He was the director of cinematography on season 2, 3, and 4. So very cool. He was actually in a couple episodes himself. I remember one in season 3 specifically where you played a producer kind of guy that was very Hollywood, and it was a hilarious episode.
Oh, I love that character. I love that episode. I go back in and I watch that episode, and the one thing, it's because I was in front of the camera instead of behind it. Like, one of the shots, I think, is like a little bit out of focus on my coverage. It always bugs me as a cinematographer, but I love the character itself, this, and all the, like, the riffing off of the reality TV shows that we did with that. That was pretty funny.
That was great. Yeah, we had such a fun time doing that. And we worked together again on a feature film that you made. It was What We Can't Have, am I correct?
That is correct.
Yeah. Yes.
I made Donald grow a mustache for the part.
Yeah. Yep. I looked like a real pervert.
Yeah, you were great, though. You killed it.
Yeah. Oh, thank you. Thank you very much. So we're going to get started here. What we're going to talk about today is we're going to do holiday action films. So we're going to do action films related to basically to Christmas time. You know, it could be Hanukkah, I guess, too. I don't know. Whatever the action entails. And we're going to discuss. Basically, we're going to be looking at films, every Shane Black film. But because I think that's one of his things, is that every one of his films, basically, except for ones that he co-wrote and stuff, like, for example, Monster Squad, every one of his films somehow revolves around Christmas time, which is kind of fascinating.
Yeah. It's funny. Monster Squad, that's a different topic, different podcast again. But what an underrated movie that is.
Oh, my God.
I love that. That's like one of the
Goonies of horror films.
It's so good. You know, another thing is interesting is, I don't, are there any Hanukkah action movies, or we just discovered a market that needs to be filled?
I think we discovered a market, dude, because I don't know of any, unless there's one called Dreidled.
Okay.
And that's possible. I'll have to look that up. Could be a schlocky B movie.
I have not. I'm trying to rack my brain. I don't think I know of any Hanukkah action movies. So there might be a market for us to fill.
Yes, absolutely. I think we can do this. I think it's a great idea. We're going to move forward with this. Everybody coming soon, Dreidled. So, when thinking action films for the holidays, what's your guttural, what's your like first thought on action films? What one comes to your mind first?
Well, I mean, I think that the holy grail of action Christmas movies has to be Die Hard. I think that that's the one that, to at least in my mind, like that is the top of the pyramid for me.
And that was directed by John McTiernan, correct?
That is correct. Yes.
Yeah,
1987, I believe.
It was released in 88. It was filmed in, I think, 86/87 or just 87. Starred Bruce Willis and Alan Rickman. Also had Bonnie Bedelia, I guess is her name, and Reginald Vell Johnson.
You know, I worked on a movie with him last year, actually, a Christmas
Reginald?
Movie. Yeah.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, it was for the Oprah Winfrey Network. It was a Christmas movie that we shot. I worked on that last year, so that was pretty cool. Anytime you like, kind of get to work with somebody that like you remember from what your childhood, kind of, you know,
right?
You know, people, you know, obviously know him, you know, from Family Matters, but like to me, he's Al from Die Hard.
yeah, Sergeant Al Powell. Yeah. What a name, Al Powell. Al Powell. So. Die Hard was basically, to give you for those that I'm in this, I don't know if there's anybody that doesn't know, but if there's somebody that's never seen it, it basically stars Bruce Willis, who plays John McClane. Now, John McClane is a very well-known name in pop culture. You could say it on the street to anybody, point to him, and they'd be like, Die Hard. They just know his name.
Yeah.
He is visiting his estranged wife, who was played by Bonnie, and two daughters on Christmas Eve. He joins her at a holiday party in the headquarters of it's like a Japanese-owned business she works for. Mm-hmm. And the festivities get interrupted by a group of terrorists who take over the high-rise building and hold everybody hostage that's inside. So McClane realizes that there's no one to save the hostages except for him. So he's hiding out in the vents. He's crawling around, walking through glass. He's jumping outside of windows to try to save everybody in this building before they're all either murdered or ransomed at the highest bidder.
Yeah. It's, so there's so many iconic kind of one-liners in it and visuals, like the walking on broken glass being one that I remember as a kid was just like, horrified by that. Like it was hard to watch, but man, like what a, you know. And I think the cool thing with Die Hard is also is like, you know, when you're talking Christmas movies, like Christmas is a kind of a central theme, you know, or the holidays is part is a theme of the movie, which there's some kind of debate goes around the internet about like what actually qualifies as a Christmas movie. Like does mm-hmm. the fact that it takes place at Christmas, but if you know, alone make it a Christmas movie or holiday movie, or does the holiday itself need to be a part of the story or the plot?
Great debate. What do you think?
I think that has to be part of the plot. Like something like First Blood, the first Rambo movie is takes place at the holidays, and there you see holiday decorations around, but it has nothing to do with the story or the plot. So I would not qualify First Blood as a action holiday movie, but
gotcha.
But the whole central, like, kind of inciting incident that brings John to L.A. is because it's the holidays and he's going to see his wife and kids. You know, Christmas plays a central character almost in the background of that story. So I think Die Hard fits right in there.
I like that thought process. That's a really smart idea. So people that are on the fence on this, take note as long as Christmas is almost a central character in a film, it should qualify. I agree with you, Thomas. I agree.
Yeah. You know, Batman Returns, I'm on the fence on, you know, that one is, it takes place at Christmas. There is like some Christmas elements to it, but I don't know that Christmas plays as much of a central part to the story as, like something like Die Hard. So,
right.
I could go either way. You could convince me either way on that one though.
Now, as far as Die Hard's concerned, we're introduced actually to Alan Rickman in this film because he'd primarily only done stage prior to this. So he was relatively new and they weren't sure at first how well he was going to do. And then he started to do what Alan Rickman does and they were blown away.
Yeah, I think that's his first movie. I think he had done some. A couple of spots on some British television, or I think he's British, or where is he from?
I believe he's English. Yes, he's
yeah.
English.
So he, I think he had done some like minor roles on some British like BBC kind of stuff in the early 80s, but Die Hard was in fact his big screen debut.
Yeah, and there's one part in spoilers for those that don't know and haven't seen the movie, but in the end, Hans takes a fall. He falls out of a it's a window or out of the top on the roof. I can't remember.
No, I think
the window.
I think they're on. It is the window.
Yeah, because there's glass and stuff. I think it's like more It's more cinematic that way. So he fell through a window or falls out of a broken window. And in real life, they were going to drop him for this scene and they were filming it. And they weren't sure if he was going to be able to emote that panic that you see on somebody's face. So they told him they were going to count to three and then drop him. They dropped him at one.
Yeah.
And he, that look that you see of sheer terror in his eyes and his face, that is real. So I thought that was.
Yeah, that's a great, great little story.
Yeah, really shitty of him to do, but also really cool of them to do because you really got what you needed out of the character.
Oh, yeah. I mean, and his performance is like phenomenal. It's another iconic character, really. I mean, like so iconic. And it's kind of, I mean, he's not the first, you know, to play a Eastern European terrorist in something, you know, kind of plot. But his, you know, when you think of those kind of roles, I mean, he's one of the first ones that comes to my mind in that kind of archetype of, you know, Eastern European villain. action movies.
Yeah. And we had that one guy in there that he looked like Huey Lewis. So I always refer to him as Huey Lewis.
Which guy?
He was
is that?
one of the villains.
Oh, one of the henchmen. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. And I can't remember what his name was offhand. But this also had William Atherton in it. And William Atherton is famous for playing a prick.
The TV reporter.
And it had it also had Robert Davide.
Yeah, and I believe what is his name? The other guy, his partner, the other FBI.
The other FBI guy. Yeah, I can't remember his name.
It is it's like right on the tip of my tongue. He was in the James Bond movie too, I believe.
Trying to think. Was it Paul? No, because he was a police. That was the police officer. Paul Gleason played the police officer.
Yeah, it was.
Grand Bush.
I think that's his name.
That's a real name. Yeah, that's really his name.
Grand Bush. Yeah, because it was they were the Johnson and Johnson.
Yeah. Yep. That's him.
Yeah.
And yeah, I'm not complimenting somebody. I'm actually mentioning a name. It's Grand Bush. Is his name?
Grand.
just saying.
And I'm trying to remember. Like so. What's funny then is they both appear the next year together in License to Kill, with Robert Davi playing the you know obviously the main Bond villain, and then Grand Bush was a DEA agent, I believe. So
I don't remember that. The those Bond films, they were starring was it Timothy Dalton, correct?
That was the second and last of the Dalton ones. And one of my all time favorites. It's one I can always go back to for some reason.
I just watched the first of his films, Timothy Dalton's films.
Living Daylights.
Yeah, Living Daylights. I watched that earlier this year for the first time. We're actually going through and watching every James Bond film in anticipation of the newest one that was supposed to come out next month that has been delayed now.
At some point, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So it'll come out and we'll watch it. But
where are you at on that?
We are now in one of my favorite Bonds, Roger Moore's world. And we're just getting to the one, Moonraker, I believe, is the one.
Okay. All right.
So yeah, I'm super stoked about that one because that's one of my favorites from when I was a kid, just because of Jaws alone.
Yeah, Jaws is in a couple of them, I believe. It's been a long time. I've watched them all multiple times. It's been a while since I've done like a full marathon kind of watching. But Jaws, I believe, appears in two or three of the Bond films.
Yeah, he does pop in on a couple for sure.
Yeah.
Which is awesome because he's the best. So he's one of the best villains for me.
Although that actor for me is always going to be I beg to differ, Shooter. Happy Gilmore accomplished that feat no more than, you know.
Yes. Yes, he also played the big brooding fan in Happy Gilmore, which was awesome.
His former boss, I believe. Yeah.
Shooting McGavin. Yeah. Oh, man. That was a good movie. That was a fun film. Yeah, speaking of fun films, let's move on. We're going to discuss quickly Kiss Kiss Bang Bang.
Oh, I love that movie.
Now, this is a Shane Black film. He wrote and directed this film. This film, as well as all Shane Black films, usually revolve around Christmas time. This one, for some reason, always felt a little more Christmassy to me.
Mm-hmm.
And so basically the story about this, and I'll break this down really quick, is a crook named Harry, which is played by Robert Downey Jr. He stumbles into an audition for a mystery film while on the run from cops. So he auditions for it, but he thinks that, like, he's still thinking about what just happened, and they ask him about somebody, and it just so happens it's one of his friends that had just died or something. And he gets all emotional and upset, and they're like, oh my God, this guy's perfect. So they hire him for the role. So he gets shipped off to Hollywood, where he's flung into a tangled, murderous conspiracy with his childhood sweetheart, Harmony, who's played by Michelle Monaghan. So she does a great job in this film. She's fantastic. And they also work with a hard-boiled private eye named Perry Van Schreek, who's played by Val Kilmer. Excellently played by Val Kilmer, I might add. Yeah. One of his best roles in a while. It's a great deadpan, kind of affectionate parody of film noir tropes. And it came out, I believe it was in 2005, around October. It didn't do amazingly well in the box office, because at that point, Robert Downey Jr. was not a real great name to be advertised.
Yeah, he was definitely a different time for him.
Yeah. This was at this point, Shane Black took a chance on him, and they had to pay for extra insurance in order to cover him on set, because everybody was afraid he was just going to run off and go do a bunch of drugs and disappear from set, and then they wouldn't get it filmed for another year or two. So he took a chance on him, and Robert had really turned things around. And this, the reason why I love this film so much is this is a pivotal role for Robert Downey Jr. This showed that he could turn around. He could make good on his promises. And this is the start of his skyrocketing career. And this is what landed him the role for Iron Man.
Yeah. I've actually read somewhere that he said that Downey said that he thinks that in some ways that Kiss Kiss Bang Bang is the best film he's ever done.
I could agree with that. It's phenomenal.
Yeah, it is. And, you know, another little trivia thing about that movie, the Michelle Monaghan's character, when they show her as a kid, is played by Ariel Winter, who is like of Modern Family fame. You know, now.
Oh, wow.
It was the middle daughter in that. That was like one of her very young and early. I think that was her first movie.
Oh, wow. I did not know that.
Yeah.
Oh, that's good trivia.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
So. But this is a really fun film. This one really caught me off guard, really surprised me. I wouldn't say it's as per se Christmassy as Die Hard in that realm, but it does give you that spirit. You know, you do sense that it's around Christmas time. And it is a very fun murder mystery kind of comedy that's great when you're on vacation for Christmas. So if you get a week or two off around that time, highly recommend popping this one in or streaming it, because it is a really good time. And it's a really good, fun story, too. It's really
It's a phenomenal. And I think you nailed it with the kind of the spin on, you know, the noir and the like the hard-boiled private eye kind of movies, you know, from the, you know, like the 40s and the 50s, you know, as much as you know, it's a modern kind of take on some of that with a you know, with a little more contemporary spin. And it's a movie that I think it's really underrated. Like it's not one that like a lot of people have seen, and it's not one that like I think people talk about a lot, so it's good that you bring that one up here, and maybe some other people listening will,
right,
who haven't seen it, will treat themselves.
I think it's just as good as Lethal Weapon, which is another one that I was going to briefly mention. That one, of course, had we had what was it? It was Mel Gibson and Danny Glover.
Yeah. Yeah.
He's in that
film.
Getting
too old for this shit.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Yep. And they played Riggs and Murtaugh, if I recall, were their names.
Yeah.
Directed by Richard Donner, who directed Goonies.
Superman. Superman 2, and kind of.
It's an American buddy cop action comedy, of course. Very American. Yeah. It was also created by Shane Black. Written by him. It focuses on two L.A. Police Department detectives. I think it was Martin Riggs and Roger Murtaugh. And basically, yes, they get involved in it's kind of like a conspiracy within the force, if I recall.
Yeah, yeah. And then is it Gary Busey chewing up scenery?
Oh God, yeah. Gary Busey was in it too. He was fantastic. Gary Busey back in the 80s and 90s was always a go-to guy. He was phenomenal in everything he did. I think that we had who did we have? Yeah, we had Gary Busey, we had Danny Glover, Mel Gibson. There was what is her name? Jeez. Played the love interest.
Oh man. You know who else is in Lethal Weapon? Gran Bush.
that's right. Gran Bush. Can't go wrong. It was Rene Russo. That's who it was.
Is Rene Russo's in there?
Yeah, she's in the Lethal Weapon series.
Okay.
I don't think she's in the first one, but she pops in, I believe, in the second one, if I recall. Which is also around Christmas time.
Yeah.
Oddly enough. But yeah, it's got a great cast. Later on, we'll see, Joe Pesci. He pops in the later
I think it's the third one, right?
Pesci? I thought Joe Pesci was in the second one, but maybe it's the third one. And then Chris Rock's in the fourth. I know that. And then we get Jet Li in the fourth. Tom Atkins is also in the first one. Can't forget him. We cannot forget Atkins. When we're talking about action stars, Tom Atkins, Thrill Me, from Night of the Creeps. Can't go wrong. But Lethal Weapon's another really fun one, I felt. Just really solid, really good film. Another one that's non-Shane Black related, because we could go all day just on Shane Black alone.
Yeah.
Basically, you could marathon on Christmas Eve. You could start marathoning Shane Black films, and by the end of Christmas Day, you'd be done, and you would have a full Christmas marathon set.
Are we talking just his writing, or writing and directing?
It could be either, to be honest.
Yeah. The directing, I think he's only done like what, three, four. That he's directed, but the writing, I think, is some of the more iconic, like Iron Man 3.
That was Predator, very heavy Christmas too, as well. I remember that with Iron Man 3. There was like a whole redemption thing for Tony Stark in that one,
with
a little kid and stuff. So that one definitely took place a lot around Christmas.
Yeah.
The Nice Guys, that was very Christmassy. Yeah. So
he did that one with Ryan Gosling and
Russell Crowe.
Russ Crowe, yeah. Mm-hmm. So, but yeah, it's kind of like Last Action Hero, which has a Christmas element as well.
Mm-hmm.
The first Lethal Weapon, I think he wrote the second one as well. Monster Squad doesn't, though, does it?
No, I don't think so. I don't think that one takes place around there. But I think he co-wrote that, did he not, with Fred Decker?
Possibly.
Yeah, I think they were co-writers on that. I think it was Fred Decker and Shane Black. And then Fred Decker went on to do, I think it was after Monster Squad, either before or after. I think it was after he did Night of the Creeps.
I think that's before Monster Squad.
Was it before Monster Squad? Okay, that would make sense, because then with Monster Squad, they did Night of the Creeps, which had Tom Atkins in it. And then with Monster Squad, he co-wrote with Shane Black. Mm-hmm. Who probably got to meet Tom at that point, and then they ended up bringing him over on Lethal Weapon.
Yeah.
So there's probably some synergy there, I would imagine.
Yeah.
Yeah. But let's talk my personal favorite Christmas movie. Let's talk Turbulence.
Turbulence.
Yeah. All Everybody right. always says, oh, I like to watch Die Hard for Christmas. And that's great and all. But you're not really bringing it to 11. You know, you're going to about 9 or 10 with Die Hard. With Turbulence, it's going to 11. It's nuts. Turbulence. Okay, so a brief little introduction to Turbulence is there's a flight that's transporting dangerous convicts. I think it's on Christmas Eve. And one of the guys that's accused of murder is Ryan Weaver, who's played by Ray Liotta. Played by Ray Liotta to a such a he was pulling off Nick Cage performances before Nick Cage knew that he could pull these performances.
Yeah.
So Ryan Weaver, and for spoilers for people that don't want to know about this movie too much, you might want to just mute this for now. He plays this accused murderer. He manages to break free during the flight and causes complete havoc throughout the plane. Various people on board either get murdered or stuffed in a closet or, you know, just tormented. And one of these people that is just tormented to death is poor Lauren Holly, who plays Terry. Mm-hmm. She's a flight attendant, and she is the one that has to fight Ray Liotta's character, Ryan, throughout this two-level plane as he tries to bring it down and crash it into the city of, I believe it was L.A. at the time. He's trying to crash it into L.A., and she's trying to save herself and anybody else that might still be alive on the plane. And it is amazing.
You know who else is in Turbulence?
Yes. But go ahead.
Grand Bush. this is the Grand Bush filmography podcast.
I think we accidentally made our whole podcast about Grand Bush.
Yeah, it's
we've got to do another one and get him on and interview him.
he's like he just pops up in everything in that at least at that time. You know.
Yeah, he was one of the I think it was FBI agents that was bringing in
the marshals. Yeah.
Yeah, they were bringing in Ryan Weaver, and they were bringing in Stubbs, who was played by Brendan Gleeson.
Yeah.
Brendan was phenomenal, by the way.
Yeah.
He was a great psychopath in this movie, and he was the whole linchpin for starting all the terror that occurred on the flight. So my hat's off to Brendan Gleeson. He was fantastic. Ray Liotta was fantastic. Lauren Holly, she brought it. She played the most frightened woman I've ever seen in my entire life. Like, she does not get the credit she deserves for this film because she was phenomenal. And Lauren, if you're listening to this, my hat's off to you. You were one of the best things in this film. I mean, psychopaths are usually easy to portray if they just go nuts and, you know, and scream a lot and stuff and act crazy. That's simple. Ray Liotta brought it to another level, don't get me wrong. But Ray Liotta's performance would not be as grand as it was if it was not for Lauren Holly being as frightened as she was. Because she truly made you believe it.
Yeah. What, is Grand Bush? I haven't seen him in anything in a long time, though.
I don't know, to be honest. I don't know if he's been in anything lately or not.
Yeah, like he was in everything in the late 80s and early 90s. But yeah, I don't know if I've seen him since. It's been a while.
Yeah. Hector Elizondo was also in this film, by the way, in Turbulence. He played the agent that originally arrested Ray Liotta's character and got him. And he did not get him by honest means. So it was an interesting little caveat that they added to the film that I appreciated as well. Let's see. We're going to check on Grand Bush right now and see if we can see anything that he's done lately.
Yeah.
He looks a little different. I'm going to be honest. Older. He looks a little different. Looks like from his filmography, he's got 78 credits. And his last thing that he's done as an actor that I see is in 2002. And it was a JAG episode.
Oh. Huh.
Yeah. Interesting way to go out on JAG.
I mean, great
show.
He did
a lot of TV, to be honest. He was in Walker, Texas Ranger, Chicago Hope. Sheena, of all things. That's funny.
I'm looking at his Twitter right now. He only has 348 followers on Twitter. Poor Grant Bush. I'll follow him.
Yep. I think the Real Short Box is going to have to follow him too, so we can reach out and see if he'll do an interview.
I mean, that would be amazing.
I think that's next on our list.
Yeah.
We're going to, Grant Bush, we're coming for you.
If you're listening, you happen to be sitting at home looking for a podcast to listen to, and you stumble upon this. We are big fans, and yeah.
We would like to interview you, yes. All right, so let's go to the next one. What do we have that I can think of? Let's go with, this may or may not be our last one. We're going to go with A Long Kiss Goodnight.
Back to Shane Black?
Back to Shane Black. He wrote the screenplay, but it was doctored a lot by director, if I recall, director Rennie Harlan, made a decent amount of changes to the script to what he thought would make it a little more cinematic, make it just fire a little more. It did have some of Shane Black's patented one-liners and zingers that he would pepper in there, primarily in the role of Brian Cox, who played the doctor in this.
Mm-hmm.
Craig Bierko, to his credit, played a phenomenal villain. He was just fantastic as the main villain in this. David Morse is in this film. He also plays a very great villain. These are spoilers, by the way, if you're listening and have not seen this film.
You should. It's early Sam Jackson.
Yeah, just, this stars Sam Jackson and Gina Davis. I mean, you can't get a better pedigree.
Yeah, this is like Sam Jackson either right after or right before Pulp Fiction. I think it's right around the same time as he kind of had that.
Yeah, I think Pulp Fiction came out in 94, 95. This one came out in 96. So, okay,
right. But it's, yeah, this is, you know, he's great. Just chewing up scenery, classic Sam Jackson.
This ain't no ham on rye.
And his character has the same last name as me in the movie.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
He played Mitch Hennessy. Yeah.
Yeah, Mitch Hennessy.
Yeah.
And Gina Davis plays Samantha Kane or Charlie Baltimore. Both. Depending on what time of day. Basically, to explain it, Gina Davis plays Samantha Kane, who's a school teacher and single mother. She lived an average life. She begins to have these strange memories of unexplained violence and then kind of discovers that she has physical skills that she's never imagined. One day she's chopping vegetables, carrots, I think, and she starts chopping them like a chef. Mm-hmm. And she's like, I think I'm a chef. Like she's she's got this... She was found washed up, I think, on the beach somewhere, and she's got a memory lapse. She doesn't know who she is. She's got amnesia. So she's then realizes that, you know, she's this lady, Samantha Kane, and she's got these physical skills that she didn't know she had. So she all this while has hired private detective Mitch Hennessy, who's Sam Jackson, to probe into her past. With his help, she discovers that she's a well-trained government assassin.
Yeah.
By the name of Charlie Baltimore.
Yeah.
And that she was not a nice lady.
Nope.
And so we kind of learn that Samantha's trying to balance Charlie internally as she's working with Sam Jackson to bring down this terrorist organization that's trying to blow up part of, if I recall, it was New York or New Jersey. If it was New Jersey, less people would care, but I think it was New York. Or one of those. I thought it was a bigger city they were headed into.
I thought it was, wasn't it upstate? Because wasn't there something at the Niagara Falls?
Yeah. Yeah, there? You're right. Yeah. Around so
maybe
there.
It was, we're maybe do it was some Buffalo type, or something.
Some
Buffalo
type of, is right there. If I recall, it was some type of detonation, some type of a.
Mm-hmm.
Device that they were going to put into the water, I think, water source or something like that. It was supposed to explode.
Yeah.
And cause a bunch of damage. So not a good thing. Headed by Craig Bierko, who played Timothy, who later on we find has an interesting connection to Gina Davis's character, and I won't spoil that. But it's a phenomenal film. It's actually probably... Geez, it actually might be my favorite Christmas-y type movie. Now I keep wavering back and forth because Shane Black, what he does is he writes, integrates such a great story around a holiday theme that it was really hard to pick a favorite, but Long Kiss Goodnight is fantastic. It's a fun film.
It's one that I think after talking with you, I kind of want to revisit it again, you know, now, because it's been, you know, a few years since I think I've seen that one, but, it was a big hit too, I believe, in the, when it came out. I mean, it's great, but, it's been a minute since I've seen it. So,
Wait for Christmas time and watch it like a week or two before and enjoy it.
Cause is that the way to do it?
I think so. Yeah. That's usually when I do it, around the holidays. It just feels right because the weather outside is cooler in LA particularly, which is where we're both at. I don't want to watch a holiday film if it's 115 degrees outside, you know, like that's not something that's attractive to me. Some people might think, well, it gives me a cooler peace of mind, makes me feel like I'm in the winter. Yeah, sure. Okay. You know, just go sit in the bathtub with ice in that case. But for me, I like to feel like this stuff could happen around me if I can, like, throw a blanket on my lap and relax and turn on the TV and play a holiday film around the holidays. So I think it's a good idea to do that if people are going to do that. Do Thanksgiving time too. I know a lot of people like to do that as well. Yeah. They like to start their holiday watching early, and that's fine as well.
Mm-hmm.
One more before we go here, Thomas, real quick. I'm going to mention, and only because I like the name, and I don't remember much about the movie. I'm going to be honest. It came out in 2000. And it starred Charlize Theron and Ben Affleck. Gary Sinise as well was in this.
I know this movie. It is Reindeer Games?
You got it.
Yeah. Reindeer
Games. Basically, the whole premise of Reindeer Games, really quick. Rudy Duncan, he's just released from prison, is Ben Affleck. He wants to start a new life with the girl of his dreams, Charlize. Whom he met through pen pal letters in prison. And then all he wants is a piece of pecan pie. And I think it's a hot cup of chocolate. And he keeps trying to get that. But between them and happiness stands Charlize's crazy brother, played by Gary Sinise, is Gabriel, and his motley crew of deadly criminals who think Rudy has some inside information about the casino where he once had a job. So there's a bit of intrigue. And if I recall, it was fun action wise and stuff. And I don't think it did as well as they wanted it to do. The budget was estimated to be about $50 million, I believe.
Yeah. That was at a time when Affleck was kind of hit or miss, I think, for people. And, you know, I don't think people were really ready to kind of take him as an action star.
Yeah. They were really pushing him hard around that time.
Yeah, but, you know, this was like, you know, wait, you're talking to, the guy from Mallrats and you know, and some of the rom-com stuff he would do. So, so I think the movie, it maybe was ahead of its time as far as, Ben Affleck is concerned.
Yeah.
But, it's solid flick.
Yeah, I agree.
And Charlize Theron is always amazing.
And her, she premiered in the film 2 Days in the Valley.
I love that movie. She's phenomenal. Great in that. Yeah, that was her first movie. That's a movie that I revisit often as well.
Yeah, they did a screening of that a couple years, about 2 years ago.
Yeah.
Charlize showed up for that.
Mm-hmm.
And Danny Aiello, he couldn't make it, but he phoned in.
Yeah.
And said hello to the audience and stuff, and then talked to Charlize real quick and stuff. And it was right before he passed. And so it was kind of bittersweet. But, it was a very nice screening that they had in the Q&A. And she was great and very nice and stuff. And you could talk to them afterwards and stuff. So it was a fun time. And
did you go to that?
Yeah.
Well, I've seen the Q&A. After the fact, like I've watched the Q&A and she definitely speaks very fondly of working on that movie and that movie in general, so,
which is great. And Eric Stoltz was in it and he was great.
Dumb and Dumber Jeff
it's Jeff Daniels
Jeff Daniels It's an all-star. It's a Terry Hatcher when she was kind of at her height. David Spade.
Hello, Terry Hatcher.
Yeah. The cat fight scene between Terry Hatcher and Charlize Theron is
fantastic.
Yeah. James
still
Spader.
Still on my kissy list, by the way.
Okay.
I see her. She's getting a little kissy from me. It's on the list. I've toned it down. It's not my to-do list anymore. It's my kissy list.
All right.
Yeah. Sounds much nicer.
Yeah.
But I think that's gonna do it for us. We're gonna have to cut her. So thank you everybody for tuning in and listening. This is The Real Short Box. Again, my name is Donald, and we wanted to thank our special guest Thomas Hennessy here. So thank you, Thomas, for being on.
I'm happy to be here.
And real quick before we go, we want to mention that we are on Instagram, we are on Facebook, we are on Twitter at The Real Short Box. You can find us on YouTube at Rumblespoon Productions. We do have our podcasts on rumblespoon.com. We do have our podcasts and video podcasts sometimes on Rumblespoon Productions on YouTube. You can find us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Spreaker, iHeartRadio, and a host of others. And Thomas, real quick before we go, anything you want to throw out there that you've been working on lately, a project that you've done that you'd like to plug?
Nothing really plug. I did shoot a movie last month called Obscura that will be coming out next year. I think if you look on like Facebook for What Is Obscura, I believe is where it is. You can kind of track the release of that. I think that'll come out next year. That is a like CIA special ops team collides with a biker gang out in the desert, but then they have to team up to fight a monster, basically.
That sounds great.
So that is I just shot that up in Nevada, rural Nevada, up in northern Nevada in September. So kind of excited to see that come out.
Still probably pretty hot during the day, I would imagine.
It actually was it was relatively mild, mostly in the 80s, believe it or not, that far north. Yeah, it was the weather was incredibly mild for the most part.
I should have brought something besides shorts.
Yeah. No, well, I actually that was a pants every day movie. There's a lot of climbing mountains and rough terrain to traverse to get a lot of those shots. We filmed it at a couple of old silver mines up in Nevada. So
excellent. Yeah. That's so cool.
Yeah. So
well, you've heard it here. He's what was the name of the film one more time?
It's called Obscura.
Obscura. So Obscura, guys, when you get a chance, check that out on Facebook, check out the page, and when it comes out, please check it out. It sounds really, really cool, Thomas. So thank you for being on. We appreciate it. Thank you all for tuning in for The Real Short Box. If we don't see you anytime soon out and about, perhaps sometime in the future, we will see you at the comic shop.
This has been The Real Short Box. We'll see you at the comic shop. Thanks for listening.